Wall Street's more like, what's going to happen in the next 6 months? And if the Fed is looking at the labor market still being relatively tight, GDP growth is still humming along at a pretty good clip, cutting rates is only going to add fuel to that, which means that as the economy would re-accelerate next year in response to the Fed cutting rates, the odds are it will put upward pressure on inflation. And the Fed has repeatedly said they don't want to repeat the mistakes of the 1970s.
You're listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, where you get valuable information you just can't find anywhere else. To thrive in today's trying times, you need the Financial Survival Network, now more than ever. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and get your free newsletter and gift. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.
And welcome. You are listening to watching the Financial Survival Network. I'm your host, Kerry Lutz. We're back from Thailand. Going to do a triple Lutz report on that. Do a triple Lutz report also on Trump's current legal woes, the large money judgment that was entered against him in the courts in New York. Happens to be my specialty. I know much about judgments, although haven't practiced in a number of years. But be that as it may, I handled literally tens of thousands of money judgments. Wow. And I had a printing company that printed up cases on appeal for attorneys. So I know about bonds. I know about stays. And, you know, it's not being reported on very accurately in most places. And also I know about what steps the state could take to enforce these judgments. So anyway, stay tuned for that. That'll be Triple Lutz number 495, Triple Lutz report number 495. In the meantime, Jim Welsh is with us, macrotides.com. Macrotides, definitely your place to go to. Jim, it's great to have you back on. So what are you seeing here? This market has taken off. Inflation is picking up. Gold is still over 2,000. What are the tea leaves telling you?
Well, a combination of things. Obviously, we have a fair amount of speculation going on, particularly focused on NVIDIA, other semiconductor stocks. You know, NVIDIA is a great company. They're growing at a phenomenal pace. So the, you know, a lot of people have been comparing what's happening to 1999-2000 with the dot-com bubble. And one of the big distinctions is back then, a lot of those companies weren't real companies. The companies today are real companies. So I think that's a legitimate counterpoint. The thing I would focus on is the level of speculation and sentiment is comparable to what happened back then. And whenever you get excessive optimism and a fair degree of speculation, that is a warning sign that things are getting stretched. One thing along with it is daily option activity is up to 50 million contracts, and half of those contracts expire on the same day. So in other words, they have a lifespan of at most 6.5 hours. So when you have that kind of activity, obviously it's very, very short-term focused. And last week, NVIDIA came out with their earnings on the same day that the Fed released the minutes from their January 31st meeting. And there were some nuggets in there, Kerry, that I think the market, because of all the hoopla regarding NVIDIA, overlooked, but I think are actually more important than, you know, the story just about NVIDIA.
Okay, so what did the market overlook here, and how fortuitous that the minutes come out the same day and NVIDIA has these bang-up earnings, right?
Yeah. So basically, you know, the Fed minutes confirmed that the FOMC members, and there's 17 voters, there might be 18 now because they just added somebody, but the majority are not in any rush to lower rates. And as we know, coming into this year, Wall Street was looking for 6 or 7 rate cuts, with the first one happening in March. So, you know, that's been pretty much thrown out the window. The thing I would point out is the longer the Fed holds the funds rate at its current level, the restrictive nature of that level is going to continue to push downward, put downward pressure on the economy. So the real funds rate, which is the funds rate, which is currently at about 5.4%, minus inflation expectations, brings the real funds rate up to about 2.9. That's very comparable, Kerry, to where it was in 2007 and a little bit less than where it was in 1999, 2000. Both those other episodes were followed by recessions. So my point being, what was overlooked is that monetary tightness is going to be maintained for a longer period. And I think that runs counterpoint to the idea that we don't have to worry about any kind of meaningful slowdown in the economy. And that's really the pillar that's under pinning, if you will, the market, this idea of, hey, the economy's not going to have a recession. Earnings are going to be up 10, 12%. And of course, coming into this year, and the Fed's going to be cutting rates all this time. Now, Wall Street's accepted, well, they may only increase three times. It may not be until June. But I think the more important message from the minutes was that the Fed's not cutting the funds rate. The real funds rate is going to remain restrictive for a longer period of time. And there's economic repercussions for that.
Okay. So rumors of the Fed's cutting rates has been greatly exaggerated, huh?
Absolutely. I mean, it was stupid. Quite honestly, the Fed was never going to be cutting rates that aggressively with the unemployment rate hovering near a 50-year low. Plus, Chair Powell, in numerous speeches, has talked about needing to see GDP growth slow to below the long-run non-inflationary growth potential that the Fed pegs at about 1.8% per year. The last six quarters, GDP hasn't been below 2%. It's unlikely to be below 2% in the first quarter of 2024. So my point is, the Fed has a three-year time frame in terms of what they're looking at, Kerry. Wall Street's more like, what's going to happen in the next 6 months? And if the Fed is looking at the labor market still being relatively tight, GDP growth is still humming along at a pretty good clip, cutting rates is only going to add fuel to that, which means that as the economy would re-accelerate next year in response to the Fed cutting rates, the odds are it will put upward pressure on inflation. And the Fed has repeatedly said they don't want to repeat the mistakes of the 1970s. And I think Wall Street has been so myopically focused on, oh, look at inflation's down. That's the driver of monetary policy. Yeah, a year ago was the driver of monetary policy, you know, when inflation was up 9%, 7% and 6% and so forth. But right now the Fed is looking at these other items. And in an election year, they can't go out and say, yeah, you know, we really need to see that unemployment rate go up and we need to see the, you know, economy really slow. They're not going to say that. You know, so they're dancing around some things, but I think it should be common sense to understand that how the Fed is approaching this situation is not what's going to happen in the next 6 months. They're looking out over the next 1 to 2 to 3 years. And until they really see more slowing in the economy and an uptick in the unemployment rate, they're going to be reluctant to cut rates. It's that simple.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have no doubt that you're correct about that. But Wall Street's had one heck of a party over it, haven't they?
Yeah, they have. And again, understandably, from a standpoint that having inflation come down is a good thing, and the economy's continued to hum along. That's about as bullish of a narrative that you can come up with. You know, the economy's doing good. The Fed's going to cut rates. So with that kind of bullishness, you know, now the idea is, okay, we're going to get away from the tech stocks and we're going to rotate into cyclical stocks. And that's really what's been happening on balance, in addition to the speculation, if you will, in the tech stocks. Again, I think people potentially are misjudging the economy, Kerry, from a standpoint of, you know, the inverted yield curve has kind of been, you know, dismissed. Gee, if we haven't had a recession by now, it's not going to happen. And what I've been pointing out is the average lead time between the inversion and an onset of a recession is 19 months. The curve inverted in July of 2022. What's 19 months? That's January of 2024. So with any average, there's been some business cycles where it was longer than 19 months, obviously some less. So to me, the combination of the inverted yield curve and higher lending standards. And as I said, you know, the longer the Fed holds the funds rate here, small businesses, they're not getting any relief. Treasury bond yields may have come down some, but if you're a small businessman and you got a loan coming due, you're paying top dollar for that loan. Consumers, credit card rates, auto loan rates, any personal rate, which is tied to the prime rate, which is tied to the funds rate, you know, they're still as high as they can be. So to me, the cumulative weight of what has happened from a monetary standpoint, I think we're just entering that window of time where the greatest amount of downside pressure should be starting to show up. So to me, a year ago when everybody was talking recession, I'm like, no, we're not having a recession in 2023 or 2022. But now I think the risk of a meaningful slowdown between now and year end is much higher than what most people believe. And that means if that does evolve that way, you know, I think Wall Street's going to have a hard time keeping the stock market running because it's predicated on the idea that we don't have to worry about any stinking slowdown.
Hey, remember, once upon a time, the Fed's primary missions, they had two conflicting missions. Number one was to basically keep the country out of recession, and number two was to keep the inflation rate down, right?
Yeah.
Keep the economy humming.
Yeah.
And now their third mission, which they acquired over the past decade, is to keep the stock market up as well. So it seems like they're like the seal with the balls, trying to keep all the balls going up in the air, and eventually they're going to come down, right?
Well, again, the imbalance, I mean, there's income inequality, wealth inequality as a result of exactly what you just talked about, Carrie. The focus, or, you know, as a result of the policies they pursued, in other words, having a negative real rate. So for almost 20 years, the funds rate was below the rate of inflation. Well, that means there's no cost to money. And that's why asset prices have performed the way they have. You know, they suppressed long rates, which meant they suppressed mortgage rates, which is in part why we saw housing prices do what they did. So you're right. Monetary policy has had a direct impact on goosing asset values, but it's also created the largest wealth inequality environment since the 1920s. So yeah, sooner or later, the music is going to stop. And that's going to, I think, prove unsettling, because to the extent that higher asset values have contributed to spending by consumers, and they have, if we see any kind of a meaningful decline in home prices again, and obviously the stock market, that stretches out for an extended period, like 1, 2, 3 years, you know, that's going to have a meaningful depressant on economic activity. So there's a double-edged sword in terms of what you're talking about. Yeah, they've really done this, goose that asset prices, but at some point in time, if the music ever stops, the downside of that strategy is going to come home to roost. And I think that is going to happen over the next 5 years or so.
The chickens will come home to roost
and not bring any eggs.
All right. Well, maybe the roosters will come home to roost.
They may not be crowing quite as loudly, but they will be there.
All right. So what about commodities? What about inflation? Yeah.
Well,
inflation's done. It's over.
No, I think we're going to see, again, we always have to remember that the inflation calculations are nothing more than a 12-month rate of change. So if 12 months ago there was a big increase, and this month there's a smaller increase, inflation is going to come down. So as we go out into the spring and summertime, the takeaway values from 2023 are relatively small. So we're not going to see inflation continue to, you know, fall like it has been over the last 6 to 12 months. In addition, you know, we've seen oil prices rally, gasoline prices are up. Obviously, shipping costs are up in some places because of what's happening with the Panama Canal and the Suez Canal. Wage growth is still over 5%. So I think we're about to enter the time where inflation, and we've seen it in the last couple inflation reports, we're going to get another one on Thursday, the PCE. And I think that also is going to prove sticky. So to your point, I think the good news, the best of the inflation news is behind us, Carrie. And, you know, over the next 3 to 6 months, inflation is going to be stickier, which is one of the things that's feeding into the Fed saying, you know, we can wait. it makes sense to wait. So I think that's going to be problematic. You know, for those who are expecting the Fed maybe even to still cut three times, maybe we'll get enough inflation data that makes people have to accept, gee, maybe they aren't going to be cutting in June and three times in this year. So that's going to be, I think, one of the other problems that could surface in the next few months. You know, in terms of gold, I think gold, you know, I've been bullish on gold. I believe it will get to 2,300 and higher, potentially this year. I think the dollar is nearing a high. And as the dollar weakens, I think that will be supportive for gold. In addition, I think treasury yields are going to come down between now and Labor Day, because I'm in the camp that the economy is going to slow more than what people think. So if that evolves that way, Kerry, that should be a real tailwind for gold.
All right. So, and what do you think the odds are that it's going to happen that way?
That gold's going to rally? Yeah. I think they're comfortably north of 50-50. In terms of the stock market, you know, and if anybody would like, you know, I have special reports on a couple things talking about the 17-year cycle in the stock market. And going back to 1939, every 17 years, the markets hit a significant high and had a decline of at least 15%, in most instances, over 20. But you go from 1939, 1956, 73, 90, 2007, 17 years is 2024. So to me, it just makes me want to be more on guard and warn people that, hey, we're in an environment where we could see a much more significant decline. And secondly, if you go back to 2014, Kerry, there's been a high in either January or February every 2 years, followed by declines. I think the smallest was about 7%, and the biggest obviously would have been 2020, which was north of 30%. In 2022, obviously, was a very significant decline. But in those other years, you know, the economy was just fine. The Fed wasn't doing anything with monetary policy, and you still had, you know, fairly decent sized decline. So to me, these things are all lining up, given the level of speculation we're seeing in these cycles, that I think we're near at least some kind of a high in the equity market right now.
Wow. So you think we're getting to the high and it's running out of gas, huh?
I think so. I mean, I think the initial correction could be limited to 3-7%. If I'm right about the economy slowing as we get closer to mid-year, that's when I think the market would be more vulnerable. If you think about it, coming into this year, the market was standing on two legs. You know, the economy was going to be fine and the Fed's going to be cutting rates. Well, one of those legs has already been kind of removed. If we remove the other leg and cast doubt in terms of whether or not the economy will avoid a recession, I think that leads, you know, to some selling pressure. And the other thing is, the world is becoming more and more dangerous. So the risk of a geopolitical event somewhere in the world, I think, is much higher now than it has been in many, many years. And those can't be predicted. And that's why, you know, some people say, well, that 17-year cycle, you know, it's, you know, they kind of poo-poo it. The reality is, if you look at all those instances, they have been for different reasons, which means it kind of beating to its own drummer for whatever reason, but yet it's been very accurate. So that's why I think it's important to talk about geopolitical events, obviously because of everything that's already going on in the world and a risk of escalation.
Okay, so what about real estate? Because real estate has like that 18-year cycle as well, right?
Yep. The March macro tides, I'm doing this a fair amount on commercial real estate. And yeah, the reality is, and Chair Powell on January 31st in his press conference used the term, downtown real estate is going through a secular change. Secular change means it lasts a lot longer than a cyclical change.
That's a euphemism there, right?
Well,
euphemism.
It might be. At the same time, to me, the way I'm going to react to it is office buildings have lost 30 to 35% of their value. Now, obviously, the building hasn't lost as much, and you know, older buildings have lost more. But the point being is that banks have typically adopted the extend and pretend delay and pray strategy, where, okay, we'll work out the loans, even though you're not behind. Well, you know, give us a little money and, you know, all the rest of that. I think the odds are that returning to the office is dead. I mean, so companies over the next 2 or 3 years, as leases come due, they won't need as much space. So the downward pressure on pricing is going to, I think, remain more significant than it has in any other commercial real estate cycle going back the last 30, 40 years. Because that was the whole idea. Extend and pretend. Because eventually when the economy, you know, things would get ugly during a recession, we extend and pretend, then the recovery takes hold, and lo and behold, we grow back out of it. I think that's going to be far more problematic this time around because of the structural changes we've seen in the way people work. So, you know, to me, I'm glad you brought that up because I think later this year, next year, commercial real estate is going to be a problem. Now, people are like, well, you know, the Fed's looking at it. The regulators are on top of it. People are talking about it, so we don't have to worry about it. Fine. But it's definitely not going to be a plus for the economy. And invariably, as you know, you've been around for a while, you know, you go through these periods and stuff happens. In other words, stuff that we couldn't anticipate. Yeah, we thought there was going to be a problem, and then it kind of blew up. Remember, in 2007, Bernanke, who was chairman of the Fed at the time, said he thought that the subprime mortgage crisis was contained.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't represent a real problem, you know, for the banking system.
Mm-hmm.
They were on top of it.
Remember that.
Yeah. You know, and so my point is, if the economy goes into a recession, it makes a big difference in terms of the stress level on those who are okay now, but close to the abyss, you know? And so you never know what develops. The weak hands just show up in a recession. And sometimes you can't understand. So in terms of regional banks, they have a small banks, they have a disproportionate exposure to this. Well, if you, instead of just two or three regional banks going down like we saw last March, and that was due more of your just kind of poor management on those three banks' part, but a more widespread problem with regional banks around the country that have exposure to commercial real estate that have to be absorbed, they go out of business. You know, I just think that those kinds of headlines aren't the kind of headlines that spur consumers to run to the shopping mall.
I could not agree with you more. Hey, Jim, macrotides.com, best place to find you. There's a link to what we've been talking about in the show notes of this interview on financialsurvivalnetwork.com. And you'll get that free report. Just click that link. Always appreciate you coming by. Hey, make sure when you go to the site, financialsurvivalnetwork.com, you sign up for your free newsletter. Got some good stuff in there. Just sent it out this week. But if you send me an email to kl@kerrylutz.com and put newsletter in the subject line, I will send you out the latest email report as well. Jim, always a pleasure. Thanks for stopping by.
My pleasure, Kerry, and welcome back.
Thanks for listening to Kerry Lutz's Financial Survival Network, your solution to today's trying times. For the latest, go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.